So what we're trying to do is to move on two fronts, to get more funding from the Congress, and secondly, to get other countries to do more on the school lunch program. We now have about 8 or 9 countries that have contributed modest sums through the World Food Program in Rome, and that's the agency that's in charge of running this program worldwide. The United States has always been the biggest contributor to the World Food Program. Sometimes half their entire budget comes from the United States. So we have to press other countries to do more, and we have to get our own Congress to be more generous. The very first year, with the help of President Clinton, we got $300 million in the form of commodities. Commodities are just as good as cash in running a school lunch program, but we do need some cash as well. So those are the things we'll have to be working on.
Yeah, I was going to ask, did you mean by the question there's trouble raising the prize money or just trouble generally with food programs?
No, I was addressing the funding, particularly for the Global School Lunch Program itself. Yes.
I don't know. There's such strong bipartisan support if you're talking about at the federal level.
Yeah.
Of course, I've been gone 12 years, so things can change, but that was never very difficult once you had a bipartisan group as we've had.
It's hard to find a politician in either party that will stand up on the floor of the House or the Senate and say, I think we ought to cut the school lunch program. It's universally supported in the Congress. It's a little tougher to get generous funding for a similar program overseas. And so we're trying to appeal to that part of the Congress, too, that has a little wider global perspective, and I think we're going to get additional funding in the future.
Well, you've got this great group, too, the Food School Service Association.
Mm-hmm.
Just a wonderful group that, I don't want to use the word lobby, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with myself if you do it properly, but they come around and you can pretty much, when they tell you what they're doing in their school and what they need, you know, they're not making it up. I mean, you can check it out. It's very helpful information. And they have a lot of friends, and every state has a group, and they have friends in both parties.
Senators, I'd like to ask about, since you both have left Congress, biofuels have become a huge impact on in the world food situation. What do you think about the production of biofuels and the ability of us as a country and as the world to produce both food and fuel?
Well, I think there's a moral challenge in utilizing food for fuel at a time when there's so many hungry people in the world. On the other hand, if it's kept within reasonable bounds, I think it can be good both for agriculture and for nutrition. I'm told by the researchers that in addition to corn, there are various forms of grass that can produce ethanol. Corn stalks may be a possible source. So we may need to press the research end of it a little more. At some point, I think there will be a problem with relying so heavily on corn. It's not popular right now for either Bob Dole or George McGovern to go into Iowa or South Dakota or Kansas and say, we got to quit using corn for fuel. And farmers are happy everywhere because their prices are way up. The stock market's going down, but grain prices have done pretty well, partly because of the biofuel consumption. But we need to press for alternative sources of energy, and we need to look for other sources of producing ethanol.
I think there's a, it's an election year, and of course every candidate, depending where you live, but presidential candidates, of course, are looking for every possible source of energy they can find. And some say all of the above. I mean, there's no limit on what they won't do. But there are certain realities involved, too. And ethanol, I think, is sort of in the bullseye right now. So I think the ethanol people understand they're going to have to make some changes. And I think the ethanol community can respond. But it's not... and they're going to have competition, which I think is good. There's switchgrass, and there are other biofuels, and there's nuclear energy, and there's drilling offshore. I mean, I'm not an expert on energy, but I know Senator Dash and I did a bipartisan paper on energy this year, and we've got to do everything we can to find it, but it's not all going to be ethanol.
Just one more point on that. The United States is about 5% of the world population, but we consume 25% of the oil and other fuels. So I think we've got to look to the future where we're developing cars that are more economical. Maybe in the long range, we ought to look seriously at developing railway traffic. I've always been a train buff, and we were the leaders of the world in the 19th century on the building and use of railways. It's a wonderful way to move heavy goods. I've even thought it's not a bad way for people to travel. Get on one of these 200 mile an hour trains in France or Germany or Japan, and it's pretty nice sailing through the country. And you got a dining car where you can relax. Good book to read. I think we ought to
read fast. Yeah.
I think we ought to, and maybe we wouldn't have to take our shoes off and our belts and empty our pockets. They might trust us on a train, but we don't an airplane. I say that as an old pilot who's flown a good many thousand hours, but I still like those trains. And I think they'd save a lot of energy.
Senator McGovern, you mentioned that the Global School Lunch Program began with commodities. And as both of you probably know, there's a push now from a number of interest groups to use cash instead of commodities for food programs.
Use what? What do you say?
There's a push to use more cash.
Cash instead of
commodities. Cash, yeah. We don't have any of that.
If both of you think that's a good idea.
I think it's good. I'd rather, I myself would rather have this $250,000 prize that Bob and I are going to divide than to have a bag of potatoes. But I'm a little bit partial to cash, and we do need cash in this program. We need it to buy utensils, and we need it to supplement the commodities that we send overseas with local produce. You don't want to run a school lunch program in Kenya or Bangladesh where you don't give some of the funds to the
local. Well, plus we can't interrupt their markets too, right. And there are things they can do with cash that they can't do with a commodity. I mean, they may be competing with the only little market they have, and that's certainly the last thing we want to do. But you give them cash, and they can do things that you suggest, buy equipment, buy this, to use these commodities more efficiently. But yeah, I think it's a good idea. But you know, I haven't checked, but I'm certain some of you have. I'd like to take a look at all the pledges countries have made and what they've actually done over the past 10 years when it comes to food programs. I mean, it's easy to make a pledge, but you're not going to feed anybody with a pledge. Mm-hmm. And some of you very bright people probably know in the top of your head, and I don't condemn the countries. I just say we just have, if we're going to feed these people, young people, old people, whatever, we've got to have the resources. And pledges are not resources.
After we got the first $300 million from President Clinton, he told us that we ought to take a look at some of the European countries that could well afford to contribute to this, and he suggested that Britain might be a good place to begin. So I went there. I was then U.S. ambassador in Rome to the Food and Agriculture Agencies there. And I talked to the top people in the British government. They said, well, we don't believe in putting our money into individual programs like school lunches. We believe in a comprehensive approach where you deal with all the problems of poverty, more medical care, better education, more an efficient use of water resources, more development of farm productivity in these countries. So we're looking for a comprehensive approach. It's what's known in the United States as foreign aid, which is about as popular as measles in the Congress of the United States. So I told Mr. President Clinton, and he says, that's a bunch of bull. So I give you that eloquent statement.
But I think, again, it's getting them to even do the package. I mean, yeah, we can all, well, having been in politics, I think it's true to say that people running for office aren't lying to people when they advocate certain programs, but sometimes they can't produce it. They don't have the votes, or they don't have their own party on their side, or they don't have the money. We've got to start somewhere, and commodities is something that when it arrives, it's ready. And I think all these other things are great. Did they ever kind of work out a program, the Brits?
Yes, we now have 8 or 9 countries. Yeah, I don't have the figures right at hand, but 8 or 9 countries in Europe really are contributing. Some countries don't have surplus commodities, and they're the ones that should help with cash. I'm thinking about Japan. I'm thinking about Britain. I'm thinking about some of the Scandinavian countries. I'm thinking about Italy, Spain, other countries, Saudi Arabia, oil countries in the Middle East. All of them should be contributing cash to this program.
If I might ask a follow-up on the cash versus the commodity, as you're both political realists, in the United States, do you think that your program, your school lunch program, would lose political support if the United States were asked to support cash instead of to use commodities?
I think if it were just a reasonable portion of the total, that would not cause too much difficulty. I went to see the Secretary of State a few months ago, maybe a year ago, Condoleezza Rice, and made a pitch for our school lunch program, and she said, well, we can support that, but we'd like to see a fourth of the funding for it go to purchase local commodities. And I said, as far as I'm concerned, I think Senator Dole would feel the same way. We we'd be more than happy to have a fourth of whatever cash is contributed used to buy local commodities. We can't ship fruits and vegetables overseas anyway. And certain other commodities, dairy products, it's difficult to ship, particularly into areas that don't have refrigeration. So I think that's a good balance to have about a fourth of it be in cash and go to the local farmers in the country where we're operating a school lunch program.
Well, George, you may remember we worked, too, on school breakfast programs.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised, I think, in the city of New York, I think it's less than 10% of the eligible children participate in the breakfast program. And we were out trying to stimulate more interest around the country, because that's the most important meal of the day. If you go to, you know, if you go to get up and there's nobody there to feed you or get you off to school and you don't have anything to eat, you're not going to be as alert. You're not going to, you all know. And it's an entitlement program. I mean, the money is there. Whatever it costs is going to be paid for. And I was sort of dumbfounded that here's a program where the money's there, and even big cities like New York, where they've got a lot of good people, they're not using the program. Now, who do you blame for that? You know, and it's tough when there's, let's say there's, the mother and children, that's it. And she's probably got a job and probably got lots of things on her mind, and her child doesn't get fed. But it could be, without any cost to her, if the city would just implement the program. And I think you probably, I no longer have contact, but I think they were following up to see if they couldn't get some examples for us to go back and look at.
So. Yeah. If I could just break in, there's one program that I saw two or three years ago in Indonesia. I hadn't been aware how big that country is. It's about the fourth most populous country on the globe. And they have a program that was engineered by Land O'Lakes, under which when the children first arrive in school, they give them all one of these little cartons of milk. I think it's a half a pint. And they, with that milk, they give them a fortified biscuit. It has all the minerals, all the vitamins in it. And it's really interesting to see that program. You walk in there, it just rang the bell to say school is starting, and they go to their rooms and they're handed out these things. You can consume a meal like that in about 5 minutes, so it doesn't interfere with the work that they
do. And the same with our breakfast program.
Yeah.
You can give it to the kids on the bus.
Yeah.
And the time they get to school, they've had breakfast.
That's right.
I mean, I don't know why we don't use it. I mean, it's not a budget problem because it's an entitlement. But this, and I know about the Indonesia. Mm-hmm. I've been there, not as deeply into it as you have, but it's a good program.
Yeah, it is.
What are people saying to you at this event about the impact of the financial crisis on world food programs or imports of food by developing countries right now?
Has
anybody indicated anything to you about any issues?
It's probably a little early. I assume, I would guess that maybe Senator McGovern would get a different response, that, we've got to take care of our own people first.
Right.
That seems to resonate and make a lot of sense. But that doesn't mean we abandon everything that we stood for in America, which is helping the poor, and as the preacher says every Sunday as you leave, remember the poor. Well, we're not going to forget them. And I assume they're going to, we can't cut them back much because there's not that much in the program. So Senator Clinton started, Senator Bush, President Clinton and President Bush followed up. But it's down to $180 billion now.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's not bad, but it could be more. Yeah, there'd be people wanting to cut. I remember when Reagan came into office, he kind of had a carte blanche, just anything you want to cut. And we learned that a lot of things we cut, we had to put back in the next year. Mm-hmm. You know, you just went too deep. Mm-hmm. And the American people, I don't care what your party is, you're not going to let somebody starve. And somebody, I read yesterday, I can't find it this morning, that every day 28,000 people starve in the world. 28,000? I guess it's true. I can't prove otherwise.
I'm going to back off from food specifically and just ask you about foreign aid generally, both of you. What is it about America that you think makes this such a much lower priority than Europe? Norway, even with the financial crisis, has just raised their foreign assistance.
I mean, foreign aid?
As a percentage of their GDP.
GDP, well.
Far, far, far above where.
I think if you added up all the money that's spent, not just this labeled foreign aid, we're going to be number one. I mean, we don't call it foreign aid. There are different names. What was your budget in Rome?
On the food budget here, well, we weren't short of funds.
Yeah, so it wasn't really foreign aid, but mm-hmm. Senator McGovern had a big, massive program. He traveled all over the world helping people, and maybe it was foreign aid. I never looked at it as foreign aid. But I think, you know, let's put all the programs together, all the British programs and all the Australian programs and the U.S., and then see. And we're a rich country. We've got a little bump in the road now, and we should do more. You can't expect Uganda and some of these developing countries that are recipient countries to be spending its money.
You know, the American people, I think, have a distorted view of how large the foreign aid budget is. Not too long ago, one of the best polling outfits in the country did a poll asking Americans what percentage of the federal budget is foreign aid. And the answer came back, when they averaged it all out, 25%.
How much? 25?
25% of the total federal budget in the minds of a majority of Americans goes to foreign aid. So then they asked the same recipients of this poll, how much do you think should be the foreign aid budget? And the figure that came out on the average was 10%. Well, actually, slightly less than 1% of the federal budget goes to what we could classify as foreign aid.
Well, plus we're getting something in return.
That's right. I found during the days I was running the Food for Peace program that members of the House and Senate might recoil from an increase in foreign aid, but not when it came to the Food for Peace program. Public Law 480, which was enacted and signed into law by President Eisenhower, I think in 1954. That's a program that's almost universally accepted, utilizing our abundance to reduce hunger in the world. And I would wager that when we start working on the Congress next year, we'll get a generous funding for this international school lunch program.
Senators, it's been an honor to cover both of you for the entirety of our careers, even the more senior of us here. You were in office before we started.
Well, you were born.
Yeah, almost. And to follow through on that to now. So congratulations on this honor at this time. My question is, around the world, it seems to be, in the work of Dr. Borlaug and others, that they found their biggest challenge getting the people fed was the resistance of government to be able to allow the common people to either grow that food or get that food. So, which is the problem? Stability in government to create food, or to get food there to create stability in government? What do we need to do to make it where people can take care of themselves?
You know, I think that lousy governments are one of the is one of the problems. That's not true with the majority of these countries we're trying to help, but there are some governments in the world that just don't give a damn about hungry kids or hungry right. mothers and fathers. And Dr. Borlaug is right that that's a problem. It's a very difficult one. I think there's a related problem that politicians who are shrewd know that if you start one of these child feeding programs, you better not interrupt it if you want to get reelected, because it becomes a part of the lives of the families to rely on this school lunch program. And I think that may be one thing. I've probed politicians abroad on this very point that you raised, and they admit that's one of their fears, that we may start this, but what happens if the Congress decides not to fund it? Then you've got all these families and all these little folks that are cut off, and that's a political crisis. So that's another thing that I think makes some countries...
Yeah, and I think it's, well, it's comparable to taking somebody off your Christmas card list, you know, been on there 30 years. Mm-hmm. They're always going to wonder what happened. But it's a much more serious thing. That doesn't mean you should never try it. I mean, there could be emergencies where we just can't meet our obligations, but maybe we can double up the next year when the economy rights itself. And that's why I believe, and you know, we can agree or disagree on Afghanistan and Iraq and a lot of other things, but I think, and I don't travel as much as I have in the past, and I don't know that Senator McGovern does, but, you know, with the people, I'm talking about the people, not the people at the top who rake a lot of this off before it ever gets to the people, you know, call it, I don't know what you call it, bribery, extortion, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you could see in Rwanda, for example, piles of so from the USA that are never going to get to the people, and they weren't 100 yards away from food, but it was surrounded and guarded by the government, and they were going to go off and sell it somewhere. And I don't know how we put that together. We don't want to start a conflict. And these people are miserable. I mean, these, you just look, there's bone and skin. And you see the little distended bellies. And that's why Senator McGovern had so little difficulty in selling what he thought was an opportunity and a challenge for the U.S. to the rest of us in Congress. I mean, he's visionary, I would say. And right now, you know, if it's a McGovern Dole program, or if it's bipartisan, Jim McGovern and Miss Emerson in the House Republican, it's going to pass. So look what one guy has been able to do. Think of the lives. You know, and they say when you meet your maker right before you get there, on the way up, I guess, or in my case, down, you make a list, and he's going to have a long one. And it's not here, it is not a mutual admiration society, but these are facts, and we are in the forefront of the war against hunger. We've got all this land out here. Not so much anymore. They're producing it for ethanol. But in the 60s and 70s and 80s, we paid farmers to let it lay idle with people not having anything to eat. Now, I was never able to figure out how to make it work, because the argument was you're interfering with their markets. And so we're not perfect, but I'm just trying to say, I don't care whether it's a Democrat or Republican president. These programs are going to continue, and they're going to expand. They're going to get bigger.